You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. With the unfolding of the Flint water crisis came mountains of blame heaped on the State Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Health and Human Services. But Wayne State University law professor Peter Hammer says there's another state agency that needs to share in the blame, the Treasury Department. Peter Hammer is the director of the Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights at the Wayne State Law School. He's with us now. Peter, as you dug through the state and city records and documents and emails, what did you find? In what ways do you believe the Treasury Department is complicit in the Flint crisis?
Yeah, there's so much more that needs to be told. And I've always been suspicious of what was not in the news yet. If you look at all the reporting, it has all the facts but none of the motive. And as a lawyer and economist, which I start doing is just follow the money. So the first thing to do is say, well, how did Flint get into trouble? What did the emergency manager do? What was the decision to approve the KWA? Could Flint afford such an expensive new program? And what money was invested to get the water treatment plant up and running? And when you start asking those questions, a lot of fingers get pointed towards the Treasury Department and the emergency managers.
And that would be, at that time, Treasurer Andy Dillon, and he's the one who signed off on having Flint be a part of the Karanandi Water Authority, the KWA. Did you find any evidence that he gave any thought to the fact that Flint was flat broke?
Yeah, this is the big contradiction that you would think as you're approving a decision, you would approve not only does this make sense, but can I pay for it? And when you actually look back at the documents, very little attention was given to the question of how Flint would actually pay for either the $85 million necessary to construct its share of the pipeline, or, as estimated in 2011, the $60 to $69 million it would be necessary to get upgrades to its water treatment plant to process raw water. And it was only after they approved the program they started to ask the question how they're going to pay for it. And there was a lot of political energy put into trying to get the money raised for the pipeline. And the big contrast, and this is where I think the notion of structural racism and strategic racism come in, almost no effort was made by Treasury or the emergency managers or others to actually get external financing for the water treatment plant. And we all know what happened when they switched to the Flint River without the water treatment plant up and running in an appropriate way.
You found very clearly that Treasury turned itself inside out and even pushed through an environmental consent order that bent the rules, right, so that the cost of building the KWA would not count against Flint's debt limit?
Yeah. No, this is, again, they're in emergency management because they don't have money. And now we're approving these multi-million-dollar projects, and when they come to the realization they can't pay for it under state law because of limits on how much bond debt can be taken, you got to tell the political story. It's the bond lawyers, really, that start pushing it for KWA, and they've got allies at Treasury that are pressuring the Department of Environmental Quality. And what they end up doing is manufacturing an administrative consent order out of a violation in a lime sludge lagoon at the water treatment plant, and then define the scope of purpose for the administrative consent order to permit them to raise the $85 million to pay for the KWA construction that had nothing to do with the underlying violation. And what's really tragic is that they raised no money in that process to pay for the water treatment plant. Right? So I think there's sort of the story of the commission of what they actually did, which is very suspicious, and the story of omission of who they neglected and what lives did not matter in the story.
And you use that term structural racism. What do you mean by that? What did that look like?
Yeah, well, two quick notions, structural racism and strategic racism. Structural racism really is what explains how Flint got into financial trouble in the beginning. And that's the story of housing discrimination and racially restrictive covenants and white flight and the collapse of the inner cities at the time that the suburbs are prospering. And so what you have in Genesee County really is prosperous white suburbs surrounding a shrinking inner city that is largely African-American. That's the structural racism that is the root cause of the municipal distress for Flint in the beginning. Strategic racism is when people come in and manipulate the effects of intentional discrimination or structural racism for their own private gain. In the report, I characterize what was taking place for the KWA as a really important example of strategic racism. They may not have intended it with racial intent, but they're exploiting the vulnerability that's created by the structural racism for the private gain of the people who wanted to push the KWA agenda.
Peter, I was struck by the fact that you found that Andy Dillon, the then treasurer, actually rejected a report that he commissioned that found it would cost more to have Flint go with KWA than to stay with Detroit Water. He rejected that?
Yeah, and you know, sort of when you start looking at the documents and putting a timetable together, a lot of shocking things come out. Treasury commissioned a report that they ultimately rejected. And there's a moving target, so I don't want to undo the fact that there is complexity in this and there's an evolving story. But at the end of the day, what I indict them on is the failure to exercise independent economic judgment. The most favorable thing that you can say is that the case had not been made on either way, and they pushed it through on political ends. More importantly, the only benefit of emergency management, and this is the responsibility of Treasury, is actually to try to rationalize and limit interregional competition. So at the time they approved the KWA, which is going to have tremendously negative effects on the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, Treasury was in the position to say, let's make the best decision for the entire region, and they failed to do that as well. So I think you can point to numerous decisions where Treasury did not come to the standard that you would expect, particularly when they're overseeing the emergency manager who has the absolute obligation to see that the needs of Flint are taken care of. And Treasury at best was asleep at the switch, and at worst was complicit in the politics that was going on to push a KWA agenda that was not in the best interest of the residents of Flint.
We're talking with Wayne State University law professor Peter Hammer. And Peter, from the emails and the records that you studied, could you figure out why Treasury seemed so hell-bent on making Carinanti happen? I mean, they turned things upside down and inside out. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, I think, again, there's a little more consternation in the beginning. The Department of Environmental Quality was in cahoots early on, and there's an important memo that was written in January of 2012 that hasn't gotten the attention it deserves by a KWA engineer named John C. O'Malley, who basically, and this is writing to Leanne Schachter-Smith, who was just recently indicted on criminal charges, reproducing conversations that he had with DEQ, saying that the emergency managers for the pipeline, the former mayors for the pipeline, and that they've devised a clever strategy to let the city council vote on it as an insurance policy in case the emergency manager law is invalidated. So the political cake was baked early on, and Treasury was trying to manage the politics of it and ultimately didn't do its job. Once the decision was made, Treasury goes in to try to make sure it can be financed, right? And so it comes back at the game and is pushing the political agenda and carrying the water forward, so to say, to make sure construction can take place. But again, if you focus on the fact that they didn't do anything on the water treatment plant, I think you have that, again, stark contrast that says who has lives that matter and who don't. And the neglect of the water treatment plant is an important part of the story that needs to be raised up.
And to your point about that email from John O'Malley to Leanne Schachter-Smith, and we hear Governor Snyder and other state officials all through this have pointed often to that vote by Flint City Council in 2013 saying, see, city officials wanted this. But you're saying that email shows that it was basically a deliberate strategy to make this thing stick no matter what happened with the EM law.
Yeah, it's being too clever by a half. And it's the notion that they were saying they want to get the KWA, they want to make sure they have the legal protection, and some clever lawyer saying, well, if you let city council do it, even under emergency management, then it can't be challenged, arguably. But I would encourage people to go and look at the actual YouTube video of the city council meeting. It's very clear that the city council wasn't provided with all the background information. They weren't given a copy of the report the Treasury was commissioned that was highly critical of the KWA. So it's a very confused meeting, and they're sitting there asking, well, why are we making this decision? You're not letting us do anything else, and yet you want us to make this one decision. And when you look at the underlying emails at the time, it's very clear that that was a charade. There is no democratic legitimacy to that vote at all, and it was really an effort to get an insurance policy for the KWA pipeline.
As you did your research, Peter, did you get a chance to speak with Andy Dillon?
I did not. What I was doing was a review of all the emails that had been released and provided.
Now that you've poured through all these documents and emails, what would you like to ask him?
I think one question is, does he regret it? You know, I think what a lot of people are doing was playing politics as usual without understanding the huge stakes that ultimately were involved. And secondly, I would ask him, would he do anything differently? Mm-hmm. And then I think he could go as a reporter, as a lawyer, down a whole line of things about particular decisions he made that were questionable. And in particular, the fact that he didn't try to look at rationalizing what was best for the entire region. And he let politics in Flint ultimately come down and create greater interregional rivalry over what should be a public good and a public utility than has any economic justification.
And then just kind of going back to that earlier question I had is, you read all of these documents and emails. Did you get any glimmering of answer to the really deep question, why was the KWA so important to these people?
No, and I think that's a question that really needs further reporting. It's very clear that you can see the force field that was created that moved political actors, and I think there needs to be more pushing. I mean, what I would do if I were a reporter and not a law professor would be starting to really look at down the financial campaign and contributions, right? So who was giving money to the Genesee Drain Commissioner? How was the ability to aggregate that and flow financial campaign contributions to others being used? So there's a whole side of the sort of political decision-making and who has influence and who does not that is still not told. It's very clear that the power was exercised, but the whole question of why and how they garnered so much influence still is an untold story.
Peter J. Hammer, director of the Damon J. Keith Center for Civil Rights at the Wayne State University Law School. It was great to talk with you, Peter. Thank you so much for sharing your research with us.
It's my pleasure.
The Michigan Department of Treasury gave us a statement and said a spokesperson might be available to join us later in the week. Here is the statement. I quote, "While we disagree with many of the facts and conclusions reached in Professor Hammer's paper, our focus will remain on moving forward with the city, county, and state to do all we can to improve the lives of the residents of Flint." And we also received an email response from former state treasurer Andy Dillon, which reads in part, and again I quote, "The conclusion that Flint had financial risk for the KWA project is not accurate. Flint's only obligation was to purchase water from the KWA when construction was completed for the price agreed upon. This was noted in the conditional letter of approval, which I don't see referenced anywhere in the professor's report. His claim that Flint was on the hook for $85 million of the $285 million for KWA is not accurate. Where is the document showing that?" The statement is too long for us to read in full on air, but you will find Andy Dillon's entire response at Stateside's page at MichiganRadio.org. This is Stateside from Michigan Radio.